BOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Andrew Smith reports on several countries set to join the BRICS economic group over the next 2 years. I have a story on a new study that suggests links between fracking for natural gas and health in children. John Russell has the everyday grammar lesson on cleaning vocabulary. Later, Katie Weaver brings us the next stop on our Route 66 series, St. Louis, Missouri. But first, here is Andrew Smith.
Iran and Saudi Arabia are among six countries set to join the BRICS economic group next year. The United Arab Emirates, UAE, Argentina, Egypt, and Ethiopia are the others to become members in 2024. BRICS stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Brazil, Russia, India, and China formed the group in 2009 to increase economic cooperation among growing economies. South Africa joined in 2010. The group has called for more representation of developing countries and those in the South in world affairs. The group announced the addition of new members Thursday at its meeting in Johannesburg, South Africa. BRICS currently represents around 40% of the world's population and more than 25% of the world's economic output. That is set to increase with the new members, which include three of the world's biggest oil producers in Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Iran. BRICS nations have long called for reforms of organizations like the UN Security Council, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank. They say the current structures reflect yesterday's world. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is the host of the BRICS meeting this year. He said the expansion is an effort to build a world that is fair, a world that is just, a world that is also inclusive and prosperous. In a sign of BRICS' growing influence, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres also attended Thursday's expansion announcement. He said that international organizations must reform to reflect today's power and economic realities. China's President Xi Jinping called the expansion historic. He added that the group wanted unity and development. However, some observers have questioned whether the group will become anti-Western with the expansion. China's relationship with the United States is at a low point. Russia faces Western economic measures for its invasion of Ukraine. Mohammad Jamshidi is the top political aide of Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi. He called the decision to add his country a victory for Iran's foreign policy. China and Russia were supporting Iran's inclusion. However, Brazil, India, and South Africa, which have strong ties with the U.S., only gave their approval more recently. UAE leader Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan welcomed the BRICS announcement. He said his nation would be joining an important group and would work with all nations and people around the world. Egypt President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi said in a statement that his country would work to raise the voice of the global south. The expansion also helps Ethiopia, Africa's second most populous country and one of the fastest-growing economies on the continent. Its government is working to reconnect with international partners and financial organizations after a violent two-year conflict in the country's Tigray area. South African officials say more than 40 countries have said they want to join BRICS. And 22 countries have officially asked to join the organization. I'm Andrew Smith.
Studies suggest links between natural gas wells and cases of cancer, asthma, and birth problems. Children who lived closer to natural gas wells in heavily drilled western Pennsylvania were more likely to develop lymphoma, a rare cancer, researchers found. Nearby residents of all ages had an increased chance of severe asthma, a lung disease, and low birth weight. The University of Pittsburgh did the studies. The researchers found what they called strong connections between the gas industry activity called fracking and two health problems, asthma and lymphoma in children. Lymphoma is a type of cancer less common among children. The researchers were unable to say whether the drilling caused the health problems. The studies were not designed to do that. Instead, the researchers looked at health records to try to find out possible connections based on how close people lived to natural gas wells. Gas industry groups say the studies had weaknesses and had limited data. In the cancer study, researchers found that children who lived within 1.6 kilometers of a gas well had 5 to 7 times the chance of developing lymphoma compared with children who lived 8 kilometers or farther from a well. That is equal to about 60 to 84 lymphoma cases per million children living near wells. For kids living farther away, the number is 12 per million. The researchers found that people with asthma who lived near wells were more likely to have severe reactions. However, researchers said they found no clear connection for severe reactions during periods when crews were building, drilling, and fracking the well. Fracking is the process of putting liquid into the ground to extract natural gas. The four-year, $2.5 million research project is coming to an end. It was established under pressure from the families of childhood cancer patients who live in the nation's largest natural gas reservoir in western Pennsylvania. A very rare form of bone cancer had been found in dozens of children and young adults in a heavily drilled area outside the city of Pittsburgh. But the researchers said they found no connection between gas drilling and childhood leukemia, brain and bone cancers. The researchers said their findings on early births and low birth weights among families living closer to gas wells were similar to the mixed results of similar studies. But it said babies born to mothers near active wells in production were about 28 grams lighter on average. Edward Kettier is a retired child doctor who sat on a board for the study. He said he expected that the studies would be similar to other research, showing the closer you live to fracking activity, the increased risk you have of being sick with a variety of illnesses. A number of states have strengthened laws around fracking and waste disposal over the past 10 years. However, researchers have said that it is still unclear how much toxic substances the industry puts into the air, injects into the ground, or produces as waste. Large-scale fracking over the past 20 years has made the United States into a worldwide oil and gas superpower. But it also brought many protests about water and air pollution, as well as diseases, in states including Texas, Colorado, and Pennsylvania.
Cleaning is one of those activities that we have to do. But what kinds of words and structures do we use to talk about this common activity? In today's Everyday Grammar, we will explore a few ways to talk about cleaning. This lesson builds on the ideas of a recent lesson that explored verbs and objects. Today we will explore phrasal verbs that connect to cleaning. Phrasal verbs are groups of words. They include a verb and another short word or words. Together, these groups of words take on a different meaning from what the individual words suggest. There are many phrasal verbs in English. But we only use a small number of these when we talk about cleaning. In this lesson, we will explore three phrasal verbs that connect with cleaning. All of them involve the short word up. The phrasal verbs are clean up, pick up, and wash up. Let's explore each of these in turn. Clean up has a few closely related meanings. It means to remove dirt or waste. It also means to make a room clean and orderly. Clean up comes in a few different forms. Sometimes we use clean up without a noun or noun phrase after it, as in,
let's take some time to clean up.
but we often use a noun or noun phrase with clean up, as in clean up something. So you might say,
I need to clean up the kitchen.
Or,
he needs to clean up his room.
In our example, the noun phrases the kitchen and his room come after the phrasal verb. But you should know that sometimes we use the noun or noun phrase in between clean and the short word up, as in clean something up. So you might hear a person say,
she needs to clean this mess up.
You might be worried about these two forms, the one in which the noun or noun phrase comes in the middle of the phrasal verb, and the one in which the noun or noun phrase comes after it. The good news is that your meaning will still be understood, regardless of which form you choose. In other words, these two statements have the same basic meaning in most situations.
She needs to clean this mess up.
And?
She needs to clean up this mess.
Our second phrasal verb is pick up. Pick up has a few different meanings in different situations. But when we are talking about cleaning, we use it to mean the action of lifting something from the floor, ground, or other low surface. Once again, we use pick up with a noun or noun phrase. And just like clean up, pick up can have the noun phrase come after the phrasal verb or in the middle of the phrasal verb. So you might hear a person say,
could you pick up those toys?
Or,
could you pick those toys up?
Once again, the two forms have the same meaning, although the grammar, the noun phrase placement, is a little different. Here is another example. Imagine a situation in which a little baby has thrown some toys on the ground. A person might say,
I will pick up the toys.
Or,
I will pick the toys up.
Our final phrasal verb is wash up. When we talk about cleaning, we generally use wash up in the sense of washing your hands, face, or dishes. So you might hear a person say,
I need to wash up before we go to the concert.
Or,
we need to wash up the dishes before we go to bed.
An important point about phrasal verbs. The short word at the end of the phrasal verb determines the meaning. So, by paying careful attention to the short word or words, you will improve your ability to use the correct phrasal verb at the right time. That is why we chose to use phrasal verbs only with up for this lesson. Now, whenever you talk about cleaning, you will remember that you can use several phrasal verbs that end in up. Clean up, pick up, and wash up. I'm John Russell.
You just heard this week's Everyday Grammar. Now, John Russell joins us to talk a little more about the lesson. Welcome, John.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on the show.
In the lesson, you said that some phrasal verbs, like clean up, can be used with or without a noun or noun phrase. How should a person know when to use which version?
That's an important question. Let's take two sentences. The first is, let's take some time to clean up. The second is, Let's take some time to clean up the kitchen.
In the first sentence, a noun phrase does not come up after the phrasal verb. But in the second sentence, a noun phrase comes up after the phrasal verb.
That's right. The main reason we would use the noun phrase is to clarify what exactly we are talking about. So, if you and the listener are both aware that the kitchen needs to be cleaned, then you could use this sentence. Let's take some time to clean up.
But if the listener does not know what needs to be cleaned up, then you would need to use the noun phrase after the phrasal verb. As in, let's take some time to clean up the kitchen.
That's right.
Thanks again for coming on the show today, John.
Thank you for having me. See you next time.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
America's tallest monument dominates the skyline of St. Louis, Missouri, the largest city on Route 66 between Chicago and Los Angeles. The Gateway Arch represents the beginning of the American West. It also commemorates St. Louis's role in the nation's westward expansion. Early settlers in the 1800s depended on the city as a final chance to stock up on food and other provisions before making the long journey west. The Gateway Arch towers above St. Louis on the banks of the Mississippi River. The 192-meter-tall stainless steel arch is the tallest structure of its kind in the world. Finnish-American architect Eero Saarinen won a national competition for a design of the proposed monument in 1947. Construction of the Gateway Arch was completed in 1965.
Karen Stieber works at the Jefferson National Expansion Memorial, which includes the Gateway Arch.
The arch commemorates the 300,000 people who, after Jefferson made the Louisiana Purchase, moved from the eastern part of the country west. And this was kind of the meeting place for all of them. This was the last big city where they could provision up before they went west.
The Gateway Arch has an internal tram system. Visitors can ride to the top of the arch for a good view of St. Louis and the Mississippi.
And Eero Saarinen, the architect, made it in the shape of a gate, kind of like you open the gate and step into the new country.
That new country held promise, but it held tragedy, too. The westward expansion of the 1800s brought many Americans to settle on the Great Plains of the United States. Missouri, Oklahoma, and Texas offered good land for farming and raising cows in the early years of settlement.
Then, in the 1930s, disaster struck. A severe and long-lasting drought destroyed crops across the southern Great Plains. Over-farming, or planting too many crops, had destroyed the area's natural grasslands. This left the land unprotected from the windstorms that arrived with the drought. The result was several years of massive, deadly dust storms. The huge area of prairie land in the U.S. became known as the Dust Bowl. The period of time came to be called the Dirty Thirties. Farms, equipment, and homes were sometimes buried in the huge dust storms. At the same time, the U.S. was experiencing a major economic crisis known as the Great Depression.
Mother Nature and the failed economy displaced millions of people who lived in the Dust Bowl. And so began the largest human migration in the United States. Route 66 played a major part in that westward movement of desperately poor people. Hundreds of thousands of people headed west. Many were poor farmers. But teachers, doctors, and other professionals also fled the Dust Bowl. Entire towns disappeared. Whole communities hit the trail. For many, that trail was the newly commissioned Route 66. The highway crossed much of the Dust Bowl into the more fertile land of California. The migrants collected their families and the possessions they could keep. They loaded them into wagons and cars. The trek west continued through the 1930s until the beginning of World War II.
Dust Storm Disaster, by American folk legend Woody Guthrie, paints a picture of the Route 66 travelers.
It covered up our fences, it covered up our barns, it covered up our tractors in this wild and dusty storm. We loaded our jalopies and piled our families in. We rattled down that highway to never come back again.
Migrant camps sprung up along Route 66. Most were along narrow man-made waterways used to water crops. This provided the migrants with water for drinking, cooking, and bathing. These poor temporary villages were called ditch bank camps. The writer John Steinbeck traveled Route 66 and visited some of these camps in 1936 and 1937. He reported about them for a newspaper. Steinbeck's news stories were central to the creation of his most famous novel, The Grapes of Wrath. The novel made the road famous and gave it its most popular nickname, the Mother Road.
That book tells the story of the Jodes, a poor migrant family that travels Route 66 from Oklahoma to California during the Dust Bowl period. Steinbeck writes,
66 is the path of a people in flight, refugees from dust and shrinking land, from the thunder of tractors and shrinking ownership, from the desert's slow northward invasion, from the twisting winds that howl up out of Texas, from the floods that bring no richness to the land and steal what little richness is there. From all of these, the people are in flight, and they come into 66 from the tributary side roads, from the wagon tracks, and the rutted country roads. 66 is the mother road, the road of flight.
Today, it is mostly tourists who travel the full distance of Steinbeck's Mother Road. The Dust Bowl and the Depression have long passed. Route 66 is no longer a road of flight, but it remains a powerful symbol of America's westward migration that continues to this day. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver. Join us next week as we continue our journey down the Mother Road.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.